Welcome to the Unsworn Gamer. I'm your host, Rob. Welcome to Stream Street Day 310. And I'm joined by a recurring guest, friend of the show, Neil. Two Balcony Neil, I call him. Hello, Neil. How are you? You well?
I'm good, buddy. I'm really good. Lovely Friday morning here in Sweden. Got the day off. It's all lovely. Sunny, chilled.
Yeah, it's sunny here too. It's the most joyous walk I've had today. Fascism's getting its key teeth kicked in. It's a sunny day. I couldn't be happier, is what I... hello to the Twitch chat. I just want to say big love to you. W. Soren, I hope you're well. All the way over from Texas. I hope you're good. Sergeant Rolf, Vip, Wargaming Dad, I hope you're all good. Thanks for joining us. Tough years. I don't think Neil needs any introduction, but just in case he does, Neil's one of the three main organizers from the WTC, which we'll try and talk about as little as possible today. We're mainly going to talk about Warhammer Epic or something similar like.
Oh, mate, Titanicus. It's just like, I have to resist. There's so much money I could burn on that game.
Really? Is Titanicus something that you'd be interested in playing?
I've played it. I really like it. I think it's actually a really, really sweet sort of rule set and mechanics. I got into 40K first as a kid, way, way back in the day, Rogue Trader. But the first, say, game that I majorly got into, in terms of like, investing, you know, a lot of money, was back when it was Epic, or back then Space Marine. You know, that was me and my mates, like, you know, back then it's like, oh, you can spend £5 to buy like a blister pack of like, you know, three metal Space Marines, or you could spend £5 to buy an entire like regiment box for Epic with like hundreds of models in.
Yeah,
and sure, to a smaller scale, it just felt better because you got more stuff and it was like bigger scale battles. So me and my friends, like 40k initially was on the back burner very much up until sort of second edition, middle of second edition. We played way more Epic than we did 40k.
Fascinating. I guess to a kid, like, it's interesting, like, the buy-in methodology and who they market to, right? To a kid, like, just loads of dudes must be, like, awesome, and you must be like, we want as many dudes as possible. Like, you know the guys that make, like, cardboard Imperator Titans? You know, yeah. Like, the adult men. And they're like, look at this! And I'm like, that's not really that functional in a game. Or people who do, like, 84,000-point battles, and you're like, how long does that take? It's like, well, it's turn one, we've been here 3 days. You're like, Christ!
Rob, like, you're talking to somebody who actually partook in a world record attempt for the biggest like tank battle, Warhammer battle in the world ever.
Did you actually?
Twice. Yeah. Okay. Back at the old, oh, Christ, this is years and years ago, so maybe like 15 years ago, back at GW Manchester. If anyone's ever been there, it's in the top of the Arndale Centre. It's a huge shopping mall. Mm. And so the manager basically convinced the security to let us all stay behind after the centre closed. So we spent all night like setting up thousands of these tanks and stuff and Titans, all the Forge World stuff, like on one side of the corridor. And it was just, we played in the shopping hall, in the shopping center corridor.
Right, amazing. Because
the store wasn't big enough. And you had like 40 foot worth of models, just squash like side to side against each other and just like, you know, push models forward, roll dice, have a laugh. Like, no, it was obviously nothing serious. It was just the whole thing of doing this. And we played from, I think it was like 10 o'clock at night to 6 in the morning. It was amazing.
Did you finish turn one? That was my. That's the
real
question.
About that. Yeah, we had to speed things. It was like, we'll just say every model moves like this far and just shove things forward. No one really cared. It was just a laugh.
I like that. There's the one kid who's just like, no, it's exactly 11 inches. I'm gonna move.
Yeah. Like, you can move 11 inches, buddy, and because this corridor's 12 foot wide, off you go.
I don't know. I'm torn a little bit at the minute. This is kind of a personal thing. I don't know how you feel about it. Because one of the things from 40K, at least, I feel from new 9th edition, smaller boards, it feels like they're trying to, not to make the game smaller, like maybe smaller, like 10, 20% less models is how I kind of feel they're trying to make the game. Like, that's how it kind of seems to me. I'm not sure what your feelings are in that situation. Everything seems like a little bit more powerful, but you get a little bit less stuff. And I'm not sure if I'm like super into that or if I'm really into it. Like, because I like painting horde armies. I know I'm being really conflicting here with what I'm saying, and I'm sorry. I like painting horde armies sometimes. I also hate it. You know, you're like, you've done your 90 Orc boys, and you're like, yeah, I've got, look at all the lads. They look great on the board. And you're like, do I want to paint another 90 Orc boys? Probably never again. So it's a weird kind of dichotomy, right? Where you want everything, but actually, once you understand what wanting everything means, you're like, oh, I don't want everything at all. Am I making sense? Have you got any feelings on that?
No, you're 100% making sense. And you're talking to a guy who painted, what, 170-something Tyranid bottles in 2 days for a GT. We were sat in Bookman's bar, basing all my models, with borrowing the hairdryer off one of the bar girls and stuff. This was back when I was at Brian, I don't know if you worked at GW in Brighton, if Brian Addison was still there when you worked there, but he used to do all the events. Okay. And he was plugging us with beers while we were doing this, trying to get us drunk. Because he thought it was just amazing. But yeah, I know, I love Horde armies. I love visually how a Horde army looks on the table. But come on, I mean, there's a reason I'm painting custodians now. Because it's just the time it takes to do it. It's just, and it's also just quite simply just the playing it. You're playing a Horde army in your sort of your 3 hours effectively is a challenge, and it becomes, you know, endurance hammer when you're playing in sort of a six game event. By the end of that weekend, you've been pushing like 200 models around the table each game. You are knackered.
Yeah,
like, your body is knackered.
Yeah, we did a whole show on that a couple of years ago. Actually, we were talking about Imperial Knights at the time and how they're the best starter army. But mainly, like I remember, I took like 18 Met Guns and 90 Orc Boys to a GT, and Nikos took like 4 Knights. Yeah, and like I'd be like 10 minutes to go, I'd be like rolling dice, like sweating, like nearly crying. Yeah, and Nick an hour ago would just be in a pair of joggers looking like he'd just come off the beach. Yeah, he'd just be like, oh, I'm so relaxed. He's like,
I can relate to that. Last year I came off my bike on the way to work. I really badly smashed my back and I was like, oh, so much pain. I had a tournament just like a couple of weeks after that. I was like, I don't want to skip the tournament because my back, but I know I was playing Marines at the time. I'm a huge infantry horse. Like, I can't play this. So I basically whacked together 5 nights, painted them up and played it. And it was the best experience ever. You know, playing games in an hour. It was just so nice, especially.
And it's so like mentally relaxing as well. Like one of the things we talked about, and Nick was saying, is that he found he had so much more time for decision making. So while his opponent was moving just like tons of stuff, he was just like super chill about it and was just like, I've got loads of time. Like my movement phase doesn't take long. So my decision making time was bigger. And I've always thought about that ever since. I'm like, actually, that makes a ton of sense ahead of time. Sorry again, what would it take for you to try Titanicus? Hello, everyone in the chat, by the way. I don't know actually what it would take me to try Titanicus. I give it a try. Let me get all these boards of terrain done, and then I'm up for playing way more.
It's got quite a high buy-in though, Titanicus, because it's, you know, the models aren't cheap. They're basically Forge World models, so that's the negativity. But I think it's great. If you, I don't know if you ever played Battlefleet Gothic.
No.
Oh, well,
on the PC though.
Yeah, but so yeah, on the PC, it kind of in a way plays like that in the mechanics of, you know, you're very much limited in like your fire lanes and fire arcs and stuff like this with your Titans. You know, how fast they can move, how fast they can turn. All these things are dictated. So the Wall of Titans, yeah, they pump out a lot of shots, but they're slow and ponderous. And that's reflected by the rules and their mobility. So you really have to sort of think ahead about, where's my opponent going to move to? How do I have to position myself to make sure I can obviously keep on line with them or react to what they're going to do? So there's much more sort of maneuvering and pre-planning is a much bigger deal in Titanicus, which is why I like it. And it's why I like Battlefleet Gothic, same thing with the ships. You know, you've got to plan ahead where your ship's going to be, because it's not going to turn. You can't turn on a dime and shoot whichever direction you want.
I think one of the I don't know about you guys, like, so sorry again in the chat, he definitely plays. I think one of the things that I struggle with, and I think it's a shame that Games Workshop don't do, at least, and I know other content creators do this, but like sometimes you're stuck in some situations, you're not 100% certain if they're absolutely what you want, is you kind of don't really understand the state of a game. I don't know, like, you know, some of these like third party products or like these Games Workshop products, I never really understand where we're at. Like Necromunda, there's loads of new stuff. Like, I get Blood Bowl. Like, I think that's why new editions are good sometimes. Blood Bowl has just had a new edition. I know where we're at. The book, the new stuff, we're all good to go, and off I go. But with Titanicus, I'm now like, there's loads of stuff out. Like, where do I start? What's the situation? That can be a little bit daunting sometimes, I think.
It is, especially because, you know, they're falling into the trap with, you know, same with Necromunda, that they're releasing lots of supplementary books with supplementary rules for things. In Titanicus, it's the, you know, Shudder campaign books. You know, the new knights, the new titans. You know, their rules are in a campaign book. I think there's some other rules as well, but it's the rules bloat. If you're getting into the game now, there's already been 3 campaign books released. So you're looking at a core rule book and potentially 3 supplementary books just for the literature. Yeah. And that's an issue. And that's always been an issue with GW stuff. I mean, the whole thing of like they're afraid of piracy, which is why they've gone to just pure print now for codexes and stuff. But the problem is, the reason piracy, I mean, yes, no, piracy exists regardless. But a thing that pushes people towards piracy is this ridiculous rules bloat.
Inaccessibility pushes people towards doing something like that. That's like, I mean, the music industry learned that, and so did the TV industry, which is why. Yeah, anyway, yeah, you know, I'm with you, absolutely. Actually, that's an interesting question, because so Neil, obviously from the WTC, and obviously you talk to loads of guys from all around the world, probably more plugged into like the kind of global community than many other people. So how does everyone in the world, like, because it kind of surprises me, someone the other day was watching from Chile, you know, or like I'll talk to a guy from some part in the world and they'll tell me like their specific kind of problems. You know, obviously we have Pete on the show on a Tuesday, and he's got to drive 8 hours south to go pick up his book, which is pretty phenomenal. Do you find that there's any sort of unique experiences for people since the digital change? There's been any sort of like unique experiences, or is that not really anything that you've come across? Have people struggled with it? How have you found it as well, I guess, is the question.
I mean, it's just, you know, I'm looking, there's a GW here. We've got a couple of game stores here. But what's actually been the struggle is this past month, for me, it's been the struggle with getting stuff because of Brexit. You know, walking into GW to buy a black spray, and Anna, the manager there, absolute legend of a lass, she's like, "I ain't got any." I'm like, "Oh, you know, delays, you know, when they're coming in." And she's like, "Nope." But not, you know, she was on to trade, like the trade support that day. Mm. And workshop, you know, can't even tell their stores when they're going to get deliveries. Oh. You know, and this is going to be an issue, and that's going to be a massive issue. I think ignoring the print issues, but the barrier that Brexit has created is going to cause a massive, massive problem going forwards for anyone outside the UK for GW. I mean, America's okay because I believe they've got their own production facilities there, haven't they?
I think they might be new.
I'm pretty sure they invested in production facilities in America a few years ago, or maybe they would talk about it. But this whole barrier they've created between Europe and the UK is a nightmare, you know. And you see here all the time for all sorts of stuff, but just for GW models, you know, it's going to be a real struggle, and it is already a real struggle when you've got Games Workshop stores themselves, not retailers, not resellers, but the actual GW official store can't get stocking. And hasn't been restocked since before Christmas. They've had no stocking at all.
Wow.
And this is gonna be a big problem.
So that's
gonna push people to alternative stuff. You know, people get frustrated, things start opening up, they don't wanna wait time, they wanna get stuff now. It's gonna push people to, you know, either free party model makers, or, you know, just printing, pirating the models themselves.
Yeah. No, I didn't. Yeah, I don't think they have an American. They do have an American warehouse, which is in Memphis. I met some of the people from there. Again, the IT guy from Memphis, if he's still there, he helped me at the first LVO. Literally to this day, if he wanted a blowy, I'd probably owe him one. Like, he's just brilliant. Like, the best dude. Like, helped me out so much. So love that guy. But yeah, they seem like great dudes. I hadn't really known about any of that. Oh, nice. Hey, Snubsy. He's got no school in Nova Scotia, so I get to watch you. Thanks, Snubsy. I want to come visit you one day. That sounds like a great place to be. I've had trouble with orders from the UK. I didn't know about that, actually, Neil. And even the guys over in Northern Ireland. So Irish Minotaur was just saying, prices change and one having difficulty supplies. Honestly, that's so weird. I mean, at the moment, I'm pretty safe, like, when it comes to purchasing. I'm not being, this isn't me, this isn't a selfish proclamation. This is more me kind of, like, trying to empathize and understand. Because I'm painting the armies I've got at the minute, so I feel pretty sweet about that. But it's going to be very interesting when it comes to, like, new releases, actually. I hadn't really thought about that and what's going down. Weird. That's a weird journey I was not expecting us to take today. I didn't know that we were even not getting just... It's not even, Sweden's not far.
Yeah, but it doesn't. I mean, I'll try to avoid politics as much as I can when I'm streaming and stuff. I am very, very interested in politics. My family is incredibly political. A couple of my relations are actually politicians. You'd be pleased to know they're Labour or SNP. So they're the right kind of politicians.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, I've been following the Brexit. Obviously, my family's in the UK, so I've been following it. And basically, it's a complete clusterfuck. Like just a simple, there's a simple statistic is it on average this time of the year they'd have a roughly 10,000 trucks going through Folkestone and Dover a day. Mm-hmm. They're getting like 1,000 or 2,000 a day through.
Okay,
that's not because suddenly people in the UK or Europe aren't wanting to, that's not because people don't want to buy stuff from the UK or Europe. It's because it's just the amount of bureaucracy and hassle and complications that the UK government isn't prepared for. And it's just creating an absolute disaster, you know. It's just like, you know, you've got fishermen in Scotland landing their catches in Denmark because the only way they can get their fish they caught to market in Europe.
Well, so, I mean, if anybody wants me, like, I'm not saying that I could, like, hump on my back like some sort of medieval smuggler a bunch of plastic, but I'm also saying I couldn't. Yeah, like I see people take like dinghies across. Listen, I'm doing some pirate ogres at the minute, so maybe it's a pirate's life for me. I could shimmy over with some plastic, Neil, if you want. I don't know how many cans of black spray I can get in my backpack.
That's maybe enough. But Scott, being in the chat's got it right. You know, lots of big UK companies have said they're not going to sell to the EU anymore because it's already too much hassle 3 weeks in, and a lot of EU companies are doing the same thing. They're just saying it's not worth the money to sell to the UK. This is gonna cause a huge trade problem. And I'm like sitting here going, bugger, I need more models. So change the points to my custodies. I need to get another pack of custodies guardians. They're sold out everywhere. You can't buy them. You know, well, one of my Swedish mates.
Oh, yeah, go on.
He actually went, he had to get null oil, and he searched like all over the internet. He found like the one shop he could find, which is like in Spain, had null oil in stock. And so he bought their entire stock. He bought like 12 pots off them.
Really?
Because he's like, I need null oil. I don't want it to run out.
That's hilarious. That's hilarious. because one of the really interesting things that you brought up, actually, talking about, because I think like Neil's obviously a good community leader for a lot of like the Europeans who, like, I was talking to the lovely Scary, who was on his show yesterday, and I was talking to him, and he was saying, you know, are you ever going to go to Spain and cover some of their big international or some of their big team tournaments because they have massive ones? I was like, I didn't even know that they did. Sort of thing.
Spain is the biggest community in the world outside of America. And they actually have the 40K, and they have, excluding the LVO, the biggest events in the world are in Spain. After the LVO.
Amazing.
They have like team events of 600 players and stuff like that regularly.
Fuck yeah.
It's amazing. But it's all, as I said to Adam Camilleri, interviewed me about this, I was like, yeah, but the problem is they speak Spanish, they don't speak English, and no one knows what the fuck's going on. It's actually like, I'm trying to get interviews with the guys, and it's just hard. The language barrier is hard. Because it's not English isn't a common language there.
Well, so I don't want to talk about it all the time, but obviously that's one of the things that's enforced at the WTC, right? Is that English is the spoken language of the tournament, right?
Yes, but you know, there's got to be some reality there. So English is the spoken language. So when you're at a table, you should be communicating in English. If you're going to talk to one of your teammates, you need to be doing it in English so the opposition understand you're not helping them out or coaching them. That's kind of it. All the books need to be in English and stuff like that. But the reality is there will be people who have very, you know, limited English or no English. And you can't say you can't come play because you can't speak English.
To be fair, I know a load of English fellas that I could say that of as well.
Yeah. Geordie Paul, for example. Paul Scott, who I love. But yeah, I mean, like, but so you've got to play it by ear. You got to, you know, there's got to be a bit of trust that sometimes people won't be able to sort of converse in English. You maybe have to ask somebody you know or a teammate to help out. And you just got to be able to trust that people aren't going to abuse that fact.
Yeah.
I mean, one of the best games I ever had at the ETC was against a Spanish guy who couldn't speak any English. And he literally couldn't. And like his teammate came and said, look, this guy can't speak English, not a single word. This is no joke. And it's like, oh, we'll be fine. We'll be fine. He's like, if you need anything, just ask me and I'll translate. I said, no, we'll be fine. We played the whole game through hand gestures. And just just say to each other, he's going, pointing at Gazgul. He's pointing at my demon prince. And then he's like pumping his hips back and forth to show he's about to bum my demon prince. You know, and just because, you know, you can by point dice a dice, doesn't matter. You know, you can point, like, you point at this guy there, shoot, and it's like, you understand. And it just became so elaborate at the end. Like, all these gestures we're doing, we're killing ourselves laughing. It was great. So, yeah, I mean, English should be the language, but we're not sort of like language Nazis.
No, I know that. I wasn't. It was more of a. It's more of an interesting kind of point because I think you, Tom, and Ishika are a great kind of conduit through to like these communities. For me, I mean, a lot like we've talked about this a lot before. Like a lot of what we hear about the world. I mean, like Diffie and Adam Camilleri and all those guys have done such a brilliant job of really bringing like Australia into the like kind of like international conversation about 40K. And I think you guys hopefully are also going to be a great conduit for bringing a lot of that European side, because there is a lot of generally North American kind of like content and focus, right? Makes sense because of everything that happened with ITC and everything else. So I vibe off that, like, and I understand why, but it would be nice to see it change up, right?
I totally agree. It's one of the reasons I started the podcast with Tom, was just for that reason. It's like no slight to any of the American content creators, but you do get a bit tired of only hearing about XYZ in America, and this is the greatest thing. And it's like, but there is other stuff going on elsewhere in the world. There are other amazing stories, amazing players, amazing events. Mm. Like I said, Spain, the biggest community in the world outside of America, running some of the biggest tournaments in the world. And it's just a case of, you know, so the whole idea of the podcast was, like you say, it was just to sort of expose that and give that a conduit. You know, we've had guys we've had chat with a guy in Japan. Me and Tom on Sunday are interviewing a guy in Shanghai. We've had the Aussies on, the Poles on a few times. We've got an interview with the French and the Greeks coming up.
Let me tell you, the Age of Sigmar Greeks, I like to, you know how it, normally it's like we refer to the meta. I call those the feta. They are. Feel free to use that on the show, They are the most enthusiastic and passionate group of hobbyists. I mean, we all are, but like, if you've never met them, there's a video on my YouTube, like, so on the Oswald Game YouTube, go look through it. It's the Greeks or something or whatever. It was from one of the team events organized by the great Mark Wilson. And it just the most excited people ever. Like, just ever, and just great people. So they're really fun. My point was actually one of the things that I learned from you in a chat that we just had one time. We were talking about pricing, and we were talking about models at the WTC, and you were talking about the fact that the disparity in kind of living wage around the world means that like you guys have to like make allowances to understand that. And like you try and understand that from different countries, you know. So like keeping up with the meta is very expensive, even if you're English or American, even if you're in a good job, you can be spending a lot of money on a lot of models. And if you're from a country where the living wage isn't quite as high, or the average wages are quite high, obviously, you know, like playing Warhammer is a luxury, but it's something people are passionate about, right? And so you explained. Do you want to talk more about that? That was something.
It's obviously normally prices are proportional to the cost of living in the country.
Yeah.
You know, so like, you know, a Big Mac is a great example. A Big Mac is the same relative cost the world over. You know, it costs what, £2 in the UK for a Big Mac. It'll cost the equivalent of £2 in Croatia for a Big Mac. But for a person from the UK, that'll only be about 60p.
Yes.
Like everything is priced relative. And that's the norm for a lot of things. Cars do that. You know, there's a reason why in Europe, because obviously the UK is a bit screwed because you're driving on the other side of the road. But in Europe, people actually buy cars. In fact, in Sweden, people don't really buy cars in Sweden. They'll go buy their cars in Germany or even places like Poland because it's cheaper than the same car.
Okay.
Because the relative cost is cheaper. So that's what they do. The problem is that GW does not do that. GW, in fact, do the opposite. I mean, Australia, look at how the crazy price inflation Australians have to pay for their GW products.
Yeah.
You know, GW does not price its stuff relative to a local, you know, local economy. So it becomes very, very expensive very quick. When you've got, you know, again, I'll take the example. We were in Serbia last year, and we were getting a taxi from our hotel, me and the Swedes, to down to the venue, and it's lovely taxi. There's a lovely young lad in the taxi driver, and he's talking about it. And he said, "Yeah, well, I mean, you know, it's a thing I'd always love to do, but I can't afford it." And, you know, he goes, he says, because literally his monthly wage is 300 euros.
Yeah,
that's a wage for him as a taxi driver, and he does taxi driver. He's also a programmer, so he does programming and the taxi driver. And he gets about 300 to 400 euros a month. You know, taxi driving was thinking actually to supplement his wage, he could have more money. You know, and he's like, it's like 300 to 400 euros a month. How can you buy, you know, kits that are costing 50 euros a pop and stuff like that? Yeah. Like I've ordered some Varangard for my Chaos.
Nice.
And that's
they're an expensive unit. They're 60 pound here.
60 pounds, 70 euros. Yeah.
Yeah.
So if that guy did the same thing, that's like a fifth of his wage.
Mm.
It's just not viable. And so we have to appreciate that when we do the ETC is an expensive event. And for a lot of people, you know, it's not just the traveling and the hotels. You're there for a week. So it's hotels for a week, travel, food, all these things. But it's also the armies because, you know, the last time we put that 2 years ago at the ETC, and mech guns were big. And you had people rocking 18 mech guns, 15 mech guns.
Yeah, maybe.
I mean, they cost what, 20 quid a pop?
Yeah, 20, 25 maybe?
Yeah. So you're gonna pay for 18 of those, you know. Quite frankly, most people can't afford it, let alone, you know, people living on, we'll say, an Eastern European wage or who live in a country that has a lower income threshold. Mm. So there has to be allowances of, yeah, they're going to use third-party stuff. Or they're going to, you know, kit-bash stuff, make counts kind of stuff. And so just got to be an allowance there. You know, you've got to accept that we can't sort of be neo-Nazis and say everything must be original GW, you must have the receipts and all this thing. Because otherwise the event can't work.
Yeah, okay. And also, you don't want to disenfranchise that community because Games Workshop can't price their models correctly.
Yeah, and this has always been a big issue with Forge World. I've always liked Forge World. I've been a big proponent of Forge World for years. But there's always been a push from the WTC community about Forge World because how expensive it is.
Right.
You know, and the people pushing against it are the people who, you know, are like, hey, these models are very expensive. In a hobby, it's already very expensive for us because of where we live. Mm. So, you know, I mean, Forge World's now been accepted in WTC. I will be pretty surprised if, you know, if only half the models are not original.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's like, what do you do? Do you be a Nazi about it, or you just accept that sort of a factor in the hobby we live in, so to speak?
I think it's an important point. Obviously, like a conversation I've been having on the channel, and like everyone's been very aware of, and I don't want to go on about it again. Is 3D printing stuff, so terrain and or models, and I talked to you about it off air, and I was saying, you know, like obviously I'm gonna be 3D printing like alternate models for different ranges. I think Marines and maybe 40k stuff is a little bit harder necessarily. Although that said, I'm like you and me, big Mechanicum fans, so we could talk about this forever. But there's a whole bunch of like beautiful models from Forge World, which. Not the vehicles necessarily, but some of the like more the infantry or some of the other kind of like robots I would like to use as is for other models in the Mechanicum range because I just think that they look cooler. Right?
They do. Well, like Rickard, who you've had on the show before, my mate Rickard Nilsson.
Yes, Rickard.
He actually all his Cataphrons are the Forge World robots, the little Forge World robots, Pilastri or something. Like he actually uses lots of the Forge World stuff, the Forge World Mechanicum stuff for GW Mechanicum models. He just thinks that they look better.
Yeah. That's my point. So like that's okay, and like if I did that, I think people are like, oh, so creative, so cool. But if I used some other robot company.com. Yeah, I think what would happen is people are like, oh, you're using a proxy, and it's like, well, yeah, I am. So I think, and I had this conversation with the guys on Skardcast yesterday, and I've been having this conversation constantly. And I think actually it was that conversation because we had that conversation maybe a month ago, maybe 6 weeks ago. You and me had that chat, like it was in like December, November time, and like I think it kind of stuck with me and it influenced me a bit in my mind. And I was like, I hadn't really thought that through, you know, and. And I think ultimately, you, Tom Ishik, like, and I would hope me as well, and a whole bunch of like community organizers are really focused on expanding the hobby to as many people as possible, not just those that can afford the hobby. Like, and yeah. I don't want to get too much into that, but like, I do think it's interesting that there's that kind of that global disparity. And CBB asked a great question, which I'd like to follow up on, which was, do you think that that cost of armies in these other countries changes up their meta, if that makes sense?
I don't think so. I don't know. I don't think so, because they become very creative ways around it. You know, the whole reason why there exists, for example, Kromlech Puppets Wars, these Polish third-party model makers,
yeah.
is because there were some talented guys who wanted to have certain GW models or bits, but didn't want to pay the GW prices. You know, and so it's kind of, it kind of like the prices have fueled an entire industry of third-party models. And you see that a lot. And you see also just a lot of people are very creative, the kit bashing. Again, to an example, the Serbians, they had a Orc army with all these mech guns. They kitbashed out of like loads of other stuff. It was just all random bits from vehicles and stuff. Kitbashed out to make all these mech guns. They look sweet as. And you could see what they'd done. You could see this was just like leftover bits that they just pulled together. So I wouldn't say that it necessarily affects the meta as much. Because if you're wanting to win, then you're gonna find a way around it. And if money becomes an inhibitor, you find a creative way around it.
Okay, well, that's fascinating. Yeah, because it reminds me of like an amazing creative army. When I was over in Canada at CCPB, we had an orc army on, and the whole thing was like, as orc armies often are, was kitbashed. And it wasn't kitbashed because I don't think money was the issue, because as I understand it, this orc player, this was like his fourth orc army in a row. He would just kitbash a new orc army together and then paint it beautifully, play at a tournament and then flog it. That was his process, which was cool. And I love people on that journey. I would never be able to do that. whenever I look at like a model that I've painted, I feel like the torturous experience has to be forever on my shelf so I can always experience it, right? but my point was, it was really cool to see. I think that kind of, anyway, I think creativity in the hobby is one of those interesting elements that we're going to be talking about more and more as time goes on. You got a question in the chat, didn't you? Which was from Herminista, who I'm a big fan of at the minute.
Yeah.
He was saying, I've just got into a WTC team for the first time. What one point of advice would Neil give for going this year if it happens?
Yeah, I mean, I actually replied to you. I just said, have fun. Be open for like new experiences. You know, the reason why you'll experience that, you've experienced this, go to like CCB and stuff like that. Like, why did you go to tournaments, Rob? Why, you don't even play in them, but why did you go to all these tournaments? Because it's like all the people you meet, isn't it? It's all these like amazing friendships you make. And I'd say go to the WTC. Don't worry about winning or losing. Don't worry about, try to do your best, but don't go there with the aim to win, because you're going to freaking hate it if that's your aim. Because there's only one team that's going to win at the end of the day. But just go there just to have as much fun as you can and to meet these people, to have this experience. Because WTC is an experience like none other. There is no, I mean, this sounds very egotistic when I say it, but I don't think there's any tournament in the world like it, because you have all these different countries, all these people from all these different cultures, all these different communities coming together for one shared passion. And it is just this huge like hobby love week of like all this like man love, all these hugs, everyone drinking beers, everyone just like getting super passionate and involved in this one thing collectively. And it's amazing. I mean, like, there's a big tradition of WTC is the Sunday night party. So once it's all done and dusted, teams basically have scouted out by that point where the best bars are in whatever town we're in. And everyone just congregates around a bunch of bars and just sits there drinking and laughing and you know, remissing about the weekend and stuff until like, you know, 2-3 in the morning. And you'll have, like, you know, the Russians rubbing shoulders with the Danes, the Americans having drinks with the French, that, and everyone's just together. Like, no matter what happened throughout the week, that Sunday night, no one cares anymore. Everyone just goes out and has a laugh together.
I think that's one of the things that happens generally at events. I mean, I imagine WTC is special like for that exact reason. I think it's one of the reasons we had an international team event for Age of Sigmar here, organized by Mark Wilson. And even actually, I was lucky enough by the guys to be invited over to do the Six Nations coverage for Age of Sigmar. And that was just such an amazing experience. I got to hang out with like everyone was brilliant. I rarely actually get to spend much time with the Scottish guys. Very rarely, like, and that's one of my post-COVID missions is to go up to Scotland quite a few times, It's not that fucking far. I need to like sort my shit out. Like, I'd love to go up there because the guys just seem brilliant all the time. But like the Irish guys, like everyone was awesome. Like it was just a great experience. And like, I think that there's that difference between teams and singles events. And I am very, very interested in team events more than I am apps, probably more than singles. It's not that like, I just think there's a much different vibe. And I think I like singles events to a degree, but like, I don't know about you. Like sometimes there's some bitchiness and I like the kind of like the flowing drama, but there's all these different cliques. And I think one of the cool bits is when that gets like disenfranchised into teams and then it's like everyone's kind of on board. It becomes a little bit more like pally, the teamsmanship, mm-hmm. if that makes sense.
Yeah.
100%
does. Yeah. I mean, I'm the same. I still play in singles events because that's an excuse for me to go hang out with my mates for a weekend.
Yeah.
You know? And I generally go 4-1, but I don't really care. I literally don't care. The good submission is, you know, last tournament I was at before COVID really hit, I was playing basically for like second or third place because my friend Calla. And it's like, we looked at the table, looked at our armies, and it's like, this game's going to basically be decided on like essentially two dice rolls. I've got a Marine Horde with like Feel No Pain, feel all this. He's got Genius of the Cults. It's all going to come down to when he charges and what happens with the charge. And it was like, we both knew this. So we both just basically talked, like mapped the game out, did the roles he cared about. And that was it. It's like, you know, the game was over. And then we just like, okay, he did enough that I couldn't come back. So just reset. It's just like, you know, do I care? And people are like, oh, that must be so gutting. You know, you could have got third place, second place. And I was like, meh, don't care. And I was like, I turned to Cal, like, should we reset and try again? You know, it literally doesn't matter. Like, I've lost the game. Who cares? I was here to have a laugh with my mates, and that's great. Mm. Whereas I think, like you say, when I go to team events, so I'm much more invested because I'm playing with my friends together for a common goal. I become much more invested in the results there. I become much more invested in my performance. I'll actually practice for a team event. I won't practice for a singles event. I'll just write a list and go rock up. And I've plenty of times I've rocked up to team events with armies that I've not played a single game with before. Mm. You know, it's because I'm just there for the laugh. I've got past the whole like dick swinging, comparing how big my dick is because I'm going to win a game of 40k or something. But when you're playing with your mates, you know, you've got, it's not just your money you've invested, it's your mates' money as well. So it does mean more. And I will take it much more seriously. And I think it's just way better. I mean, I'm totally with like Adam Camilleri. When I was chatting to him a couple weeks ago, he was saying how he's pretty much at the point where he's not going to bother playing in singles events anymore. He's just going to play in team events.
Yeah. One of the nice things about team events is what it's always going to do is it's always going to give new people a way in. Like, so one of the criticisms that I've leveled at the ETC before, and I think that you'll agree with this, is that like it can be quite nepotistic to get into a team. There's a problem, like you were getting into teams often. Some countries not. It depends on the country, right? Some countries not, some countries yes. So it does depend on their charter and how they actually run it. But it also kind of makes sense. They're your mates, so you're going to think that they're brilliant and they're who you want to hang out with. However, I think like as more team events pop up and more people kind of like get vibe with it, I think people are going to form their own little teams. They're going to get their own little logos and that'll become a thing. And I like that. I think that that's going to be, I think that it helps people. It's kind of, I'm not saying teams replace clubs, but I think clubs can produce teams if there's a way of putting it. And I think it's a nice way for people to kind of organize themselves.
Yeah, absolutely. I would also say your club can't be your team and you just have multiples of it, you know? Like, you have a prime team, a beta team or whatever, you know? It's like, yeah. I mean, there's no reason why, you know, you could, even within your club, it could be, you know, obviously you compete to see who gets into the A team, just like any sports. You know, I come from a rugby background. So every club I play for has multiple teams. You know, they have the A team, which is the first team, the best team, and they'll have like a second, a third, a fourth, or whatever. You know, and that actually becomes really good because if you're in a competitively minded, you know, that allows, you know, everyone in your club to find a niche because there'll be the competitively minded people who push to get into the first team. You know, the Honest Wargamer A team. And then there'll be the guys who like they're not happily be in the third team or whatever. And there'll be the guys in the middle who want to get better, and the motivation of having to perform to prove yourself to get into the top team will actually improve their game, and as a result, it'll probably improve your community because more people are invested, more interest in playing and such like. And that's why I believe team tournaments are a great way to build communities. You know, yeah. talking to Tomo, the guy in Japan, mm-hmm. the two co-captains of the Japanese TC team. What they've been doing, they've had, obviously, an issue in Japan that you have native Japanese and expats. And there's generally been a historical divide between them. You know, most Japanese people don't speak English. Mm-hmm. And a lot of expats are there short term, so they don't really learn Japanese. There's always been a divide. And what him and a few other guys have done is really try to bridge that divide by creating a series of team tournaments. And these are just simple one-day events to start off with.
Yeah.
You know, one day, three games, round robin, each team plays each other, done and dusted. And they're becoming... The last one he was going to do was going to be a three-game event. He had to bump it to a four-game event because he had too many teams applying.
Amazing.
And he's already looking at like a two-day and stuff. And he says like that within 6 months or something of doing these, the community is really coming, like both pulling together the different parts of this community and increasing interest generally for like tournaments and being part of it. You know, people who kind of like sat on the sidelines a bit are now like wanting to, you know, what do I need to get my army up, wants to play games, get their army up to speed, get their rules up to speed to play in these tournaments. Mm. And that's just fantastic. And that's just one example. But I do believe, you know, team events is a great way to build community. The Down on the Normal Blokes, mm-hmm. the Australian podcast, they're doing the same thing. They're doing a series of team events in their community. It's Brisbane they're all based in because they want to, you know, build the community up. And they've decided this is the best way to do it. What they've done is really smart because there's obviously a core of those guys. They're very, very good gamers. So what they've done is instead of creating like them being the super team smashing everybody, they all created their own separate teams and they're just pulling all the new guys into their teams. There's one good guy in each team and then say three or four new guys. And it's a way to lift them up.
Mm.
And I think, yes, because again, playing for yourself is fun, but playing for your mates and playing for your mates is way more fun.
Yeah, I'm absolutely on board with that. Yeah, I think that's two impassioned people having that conversation. I think, and I don't think there's anyone in the chat who doesn't necessarily agree. I think there's lots really to talk about that. I mean, also frustrating. I'm there thinking about it now as you're talking. I'm like, fuck off, COVID, one day. But
oh, mate, tell me about it. I'm just dying to go to see my friends in like Stockholm, and I'm dying to play some games again.
Same. So one of the things that's interesting me as well. Obviously, everyone always bangs on about like team events, WTC tier, all that time. What are you painting up now, Neil? Like, I know that you're Age of Sigmar curious. I don't know if people even ask you about this.
I've always had one army. I played in Warhammer.
Okay.
Chaos. I've always played Chaos. I've always loved the aesthetic of Chaos Warriors. Always since. Cry would be 5th Ed Warhammer.
Yeah.
Back when it was like the first original box set when it was High Elves and Goblins. Mm. When they released Chaos book there, I was like, wow, I can have a 1,200, I can have an army that has like a lord that costs 1,200 points and a 2,000 point army and sort of idiotic things you do when you're 12 years old. But yeah, I love Chaos. I've always liked them. And when I moved to Sweden, I sold a lot of my armies. I had this ridiculous collection of models for 40k fan, all sorts of stuff. And most of it I've never played in years. So I sold the majority of it when I came here. Just A, to sort of free up space, and B, to generate money. And one of the things I sold was I had this Chaos army, it was all mounted and stuff, warrior army I really liked. And I sold it. And I was like, you know, going to get back into it. And Age of Sigmar happened. And to be frank, when Age of Sigmar first dropped, it was biff. It was rubbish. And so it kind of like killed my interest a little bit. But when the new Chaos, when the new Slaves of Darkness box sets, the beginner battle, Star Collecting Box, that's it. When that came out last year, I was like, yes, right, back into it. So I bought a ton of them, been doing it. I keep messaging you periodically going, what do you think of this list? And you keep going, more Marauders. But which I keep saying this, I won't buy any Marauders because the models are terrible. But yeah, then but those ones I sent you that file for.
Yeah.
I'm really keen. So, you know, if you fancy printing some models at some time, Rob, you know, some orders.
We'll talk afterwards. Yeah, no problem.
non-GW ones, by the way, guys, completely independent. Non-GW ones, but they look cool.
There's some absolutely stonk Marauder-esque other sculpts that are available. Yeah. So yeah, like I'm with you there. Can I say thanks, Mr. Lee, for subscribing. for subscribing. Thanks so much. Connery says you could use the Warcry warbands as marauders. So, but I mean, number it's one, they're very expensive.
Very
expensive, and also like they are their own units, but they do and would work well. I think the other maybe I don't know. They don't look.
You could use this. Is it the Spire Tyrants? They would work, I think, because they are probably the most Marauder-esque. They're the most generic Chaos.
Yeah, I mean, all of them. If you wanted Marauders for, let's say, Tzeentch, then you would obviously do the Burb ones. And then, like, I mean, I guess there's not really a Nurgly one. There's, like, the Splintered Fang, which are, like, they're kind of, like, poison thing. Like, they look kind of cool, but they're not...
I think when they get back around to updating
Chaos.
Glockkin. The Nurgle book. What's the Nurgle book?
Yeah, the Magikin and Nurgle.
Magikin, yeah. Glockkin's the big thing, isn't it? Yeah. But I think when they get back to updating that, you'll probably find they'll do a warband as well. Because it seems to be what they do, you know, the Warcry and the Underworld stuff is tied in a lot to what the main book releases are.
It's also a really good indication of like what they're going to be doing for Age of Sigmar soonish, generally. But yeah, so you're right. It's interesting. Like, what is it about the Chaos aesthetic that you really enjoy?
It's just so metal. It's just the most metal art there is. You know, when I will regularly put on like Steel Panther and stuff when I'm painting them, just to get in the mood.
I love Steel Panther.
I just love that kind of heavy metal aesthetic. I mean, I play League of Legends, and there's no surprise in League of Legends, my main character is Mordekaiser, who's basically a Chaos Warrior. You know, I just love that aesthetic. I've always loved Chaos. You know, even in 40K, you know, Chaos Space Marines, I used to have a monstrous collection of Chaos Marines dating all the way back to second edition. You know, it's just that kind of spiky, gnarly aesthetic just always appealed to me.
So with talking about your love of Chaos, like, do you have any kind of like hot takes, first thoughts about Mortarion and about the Death Guard themselves?
I'm sort of torn. I don't mind the changes they've made. You know, a lot of people are crying things like, oh, they've lost the Hateful Assault and Death the False Emperor. I mean, Death the False Emperor always kind of like irked me a bit as a rule. Because it's like, why did Chaos just generically get a massive buff to half the armies in the game for no cost? For actually no cost, when you look at a Chaos Space Marine costs the same as a normal Space Marine. So for no cost, still getting a massive buff there. Yeah. And I just didn't understand that. And also, it was a rule that people generally forgot. And like, you know, the amount of times I'm playing games with people, like, they draw the hit dice, they stop people, like, oh, I forgot this. And it's like, well, no, we can't, you know, guess how many sixes you had, you know. It's just like an extra rule that people forgot about. So not really the end of the world. I mean, yeah, they lost Hateful Assault, but hey, they got an extra attack base, which is better. Surely getting an extra attack all the time is better. The one thing I don't like is it's not getting access to demons. I think I like the push for mono. I've always been a mono army player. I don't like aligning things that much.
Yeah.
I play my armies clean because I like this, you know, whatever the army is, I'll play it like as a mono army. Mm. But I think that demons are such an integral part of Chaos that I would have liked to have seen them incorporate the demons in the Death Guard book. Like, they had them in the book previously, but there were some issues with keywords. They could have easily solved that. You could easily still take in, you know, plague bearers and stuff like that. You don't have to give them any amazing rules. You can give them some very generic stuff and still keep the focus on the Marines. But I think it's not that you can't take the demons, but you are hobbling yourself by taking demons. Mm. I feel like you miss out. So I think there should be something to allow you to just take Nurgle demons still and not lose out. Just for the aesthetics of it, and just for, you know, how it fits into the fluff.
I mean, they're being led by a demon.
Yeah, they're being led by Mortarion. You know. Yeah,
he's a giant demon. Like, and you can have demon princes. So, like, I understand what you're saying. Like, and it makes sense. Just having like demons out of it does seem. In fact, actually, it's a really good point. Like, it almost seems it's very counterintuitive. Yeah. Ultimately,
I mean, I get there's obviously you don't want to have the book too bloated, and you know, if you were to have like all the Nurgle rules in that book, it would be quite a hefty book at that point. There'd be a lot of rules in, but you could maybe a much trimmed down. You know, you don't by having Death Guard, say having Death Guard Nurgle demons, you don't get access to all the same strats that a demon would have, and that could kind of make sense. They're a slightly more diluted version, but you can still keep the core models. I'd like that. Mortarion is tough as nails, and I mean he's going to be a big issue to deal with, but that's fine because he's a massive centerpiece model and he is the demon bloody Primarch. He should be an issue to deal with. He shouldn't be such a pushover as he was before, I think. So he's going to be a thing to tailor for. That's just all it is. It's just like when you had to tailor for Castellan Knights and stuff. You had to think to yourself, if I meet this, what do I do? How can I deal with it? Or if I can't deal with it, how do I mitigate it? You know? Yeah. So that's not an issue. I mean, I'm super keen because I really love Death Guard aesthetic. And I love, of all kind of models, both Chaos Marines and normal Marines, that Terminator's always been a thing for me. Always love Terminators over normal stuff, and there's a list I've already put together, which is Mortarion, a bunch of Terminators, and some Poxwalkers, which has got me super excited because it's just tough as nails.
Yeah, and if you roll well, I mean, it's one of those things with Invuln saves, right? You roll well, that army's just surviving the Earth, which is great news. I can completely understand people's vibe. Both sides of the fence, like they're like, this seems very strong, but like, unfortunately, also that's the other problem with this kind of codex release sort of like system, is it's really out of context. Because I'm like, okay, I imagine Magnus is also going to be ridiculous as well. Then is kind of where my brain goes, and so then I think, right, okay, where do the rest of the kind of armies sit in relation to that? And if the Demon Primarch is going to be that strong, are we going to see Gazgul get some like massive changes? And he's already pretty brilliant in my opinion. Or we're going to see like a bigger orc that's stronger, and you know, like Silent King, he's out there being kick ass. Are we going to go see some like super strong, outrageous sort of like Tau stuff in the future? You know, like we don't really know where the other books sit power level wise. We only know about Marines.
But does there need to be? I mean, it's a 490 point model that one army can take one of. You know, it's a quarter of your points. I don't feel like you have to have a similar option for every army for the game to still be balanced. I don't think there has to be that case. And like, there's a lot of people like, you know, decrying how, you know, when's Lionel Johnson coming, or saying, when are the other like Loyalist Primarchs coming? When's the other Demon Primarchs coming? I don't think the game doesn't require them. It'd be cool. It doesn't require them. Equally, I don't think like Tau require a Primarch killing vehicle, you know, or a Primarch equivalent. I don't think that there's a need for that. You know, the cool centerpiece models are cool, but you know, if the issue is, if you were to have like those kind of things in every army, they would start becoming the de factos of every army. Yeah. Which I don't know if you ever played War Machine or paid attention to War Machine at all.
No.
Well, they did a thing. They started bringing out things called Colossuses and in the Hordes, and goes Behemoth or something. These very giant models, like knight size models. And they quickly became the defining thing in the game. And basically, if you want to, basically everyone had to include those. Okay. And therefore, the cool factor kind of disappeared. Because if everybody has the giant death robot, then the giant death robot stops being as cool.
Yeah. That's true. And like Gitly says in the chat, the problem with having models like that are in every faction, for example, is that the game becomes about like dealing with those models. And not really about anything else. It's not diversity. And I think one of the things that we got promised with this edition, and I think one of the things that we would always like, is you'd like to play your army the way it's meant to play, or narratively feels like it's meant to play, and you have some opportunity chance to win. Now, obviously, that there's a lot more to it than that when it comes to actually like being competitive and designing lists, because the rules writers at best are like, okay. And I think they've got a long way to go with understanding what makes the game not only competitive but fun, because I think that's going to be a really important conversation as well. Because ultimately, I don't know if you saw a tweet that I shared the other day, which I thought was very true. Someone said they were talking about computer games, but I think it got shared by someone talking about miniature games as well. And I think I share the sentiment, the concept that the game should be built from the ground up, from a fundamental of the people playing this should enjoy themselves, and the story should be integral to what they're playing, it shouldn't be that, like, just the mechanics of the game are okay, if that makes sense. And then yeah, everything else in the
afterthought. I agree. I mean, I've dabbled in so... I don't have Twitter, by the way, so tweets straight over my head. Oh, my headphones are unplugged again. But I agree, I've played so many games, so many war games over the years, and the reason I keep coming back to 40K in particular, or Warhammer, or the other ones, is because of this aesthetic, because of this engagement, the story it tells, the look of it, and all these things. That's what engages me. They're not the best rule sets, you know, by any stretch of the imagination. There are so many issues with 40K, even this edition. There are so many issues with AOS. There are way better rule sets out there, but they don't engage me in terms of how they feel, how they look, how they play, like those things. And I think it is a visual hobby. It's a tactile hobby. You know, we invest so much time in building these models, painting these models, crafting these wonderful looking boards, that if the aesthetic doesn't appeal to you, you're not going to enjoy the game, no matter how good the actual core rule set is. Mm.
Yeah, I understand. Yeah, good points.
I was really laughing at Servitor. Yeah, yes, I have a large jug of juice here because it is way too far to walk all the way there to my huge fridge.
I also would like to say I think I pretty much agree with Gitley's point in the chat that things like Mortarion do produce an arms race, but we don't know what the rest of the arms race looks like right now, so we'll see. Maybe it'll be cyclical like Age of Sigmar, where it was like, this is meant to beat that, and then they release the next thing, or maybe there's a plateau that it all gets released on.
But I mean, like, for example, right? Age of Sigmar, Nagash, Archeon.
Yeah.
They're the equivalent. They're like Morty Magnuses, aren't they?
Yes.
Are they game breaking? I mean, if a Nagash is in the game, you have to have a way to, you have to have a plan to deal with or negate him. Either I can kill him or I can do these things to ignore him and negate him or mitigate him.
I'll tell you what, 40 Marauders does in for both. But
I saw that game.
But no, I think one of the interesting things about being someone who's, you know that I'm not as competitive at 40K as I would like to be. That's why Tom and Nick are so brilliant, because they keep it up. But it's one of my hopes that once we get back to gaming, I'll be able to get better. Well, it's more narrative gamer now. But yeah, I'd like to get really, really good at 40K. Hopefully, maybe I'm not brilliant at Age of Sigmar either, but at least aware of both game systems well enough. Yeah. But one of those things that's taken me a few years to actually understand is that there's a core fundamental difference. So while the mechanics are basically the same to some degree, actually, once you deep dive it, and I think really only by people who play both competitively, and I played some 8th edition tournaments, and I kept track. So if you only play both seriously, you'll understand that there's actually a de-embarkation, there's a big, big difference between the two that isn't immediately transparent. Like, you could talk about wounds rolling over and the priority roll and some really obvious things like that, but really it's got everything to do with the strengths and toughness value. Yeah. And not and once you have that conversation, it's a good analogy talking about Mortarion comparing to Nagash and Archeon, but they both take up nearly 1,000 points. He only takes up 500 points. So, like, it's half an army versus a quarter of an army in power level. But also, the way that you deal with them is the way that you deal with everything else. Whereas in 40K, you have to specifically tech for, like, toughness 8. Whereas you don't specifically tech. Like, if 40 Marauders are going to wipe out a block of Skinks, they're going to wipe out a block of... they're going to wipe out Nagash, right? It's that same... they have that same output no matter what you put them up against. I mean, rend and armor saves are important in that convo, whereas in 40K that's a different one, and then that changes up the shape of the game massively. I think it's actually really good for 40K, because what you end up with, I've toyed with this, and I could talk about this for like 14 hours, but like the concept that I wouldn't want just 10 Lasgun dudes to shoot another 10 Lasgun dudes and do as many wounds as they would if they were shooting Morty. It doesn't make any sense.
No.
Right? Like, you need to fire a nuke at the monster. Like, I get it. So I think that needs to be in there, and it doesn't really make sense that 40 Marauders, like, wipe out Nagash. But also, I don't think that a god should really be in the game, and I think maybe Morty also maybe shouldn't be in the game. As much as I love him, yeah, and as much as I love those big models, I'm not 100% certain they should be in, like, what is effectively, like, skirmish-esque level games. Like, if you looked at them narratively,
yeah, the games are not, like I say, they don't follow narrative at all. You know, Morty in like the Horus Heresy books, you know, he stands in front of the Imperial Palace, and every gun, like guns, like enough guns to level the planet themselves, shoot at him, and he shrugs it off, kind of thing. You know, like they should be leading. You know, if you had Morty in the game and you played Nightwing, he should be leading thousands of models. I totally get that, but I just think Rule of Cool. You know, big ass cool centerpiece model. Why not? I think it makes the game look better.
Yeah, I wouldn't mind seeing something like only usable in 3,000-point games. And then you could have tournaments that do 3,000-point matches. You know, like, you know, and then you end up with, I think horses for courses in some situations. And but it's in the game now and they sell it as a model, so there's no way it's not getting, like, shoehorned. Like, it's going to be absolutely thundered into, like, 2,000-point games. And it's the same. Same with Age of Sigmar. Like, they've got gods running around. And, I mean, Gotrek's, like, 20 quid. He's, like, this big. You know, and like he's 500 points and will like literally nuke an army in some situations, which will make you have a real feel bad. Yeah. Some days. But yeah, Herbalist, I agree with that. The way I always thought of it is that the battle you play is the focal point of a much bigger battle that's going on. A bit like the kind of the old Greek stories where everyone kind of stops and watches the two heroes battling it out, you know. But yeah. That it all makes sense. It does. And I think the big models maybe would... It'd be fun to see a couple of tournament setups where big models aren't a thing. You're not allowed big models. And whatever you want to define big models as. And not because I'm not trying to gatekeep that. Trying to create a different experience of people would be interesting, I think.
See, my issue with that, and this is I've always had a bit of an issue with comp where you specifically ban certain types of models. Is that what happens if the guy who's a knight player, who is just a knight player, that's his army. He likes his army, for example. You ban big models. Yeah, but then he's, you know, you're disenfranchising him. You're forcing him to buy a whole load of Helverins, have 2,000 points of Helverins that he's only going to use at your one event.
I think the flip of the conversation is that the existence of those models disenfranchises other models. Like so there's always, which is always like the turning cogs of the game as is anyway. One of the things that I'm very excited about in the future, and one of the things that has been happening on TTS, and I hope will happen more, is there'll be more bespoke events. I get it, like when you do have something like WTC or LVO or like, you know, like the Spanish event, and there's all these people and it's got massive hype, that's great. I do love the idea of just organizing some small little events where it's just 16 dudes, 20 dudes getting together and just trying something a little bit more interesting. Like, or not more interesting, something different, yeah, and then trying it out. It doesn't have to be like the new game format. It's just a fun little thing you do as an extra, and I think that would be really fun.
Oh no, don't get me wrong. I'm not like anti-comp. I just don't like the idea of banning certain things, like saying you can't take that toy on this army. There's ways to comp things. There are ways to adjust stuff to. You mitigate the worst offenders. I mean, as you say, I like comp. I used to be, before I came to Sweden, I used to run lots and lots of events in the UK. And one of the most popular events was called Battle of the Chumps. It's a quality name for a tournament. And it was, and this was a heavily comped event. It was, you played, you had a 1,000-point list, a 1,500-point list, a 2,000-point list. You played two games of each one. There were lots of intricate rules. And when you built the list up, like what you could add, could not add, like requirements that a 1,000-point list could have this, could have that. But the goal was at the end of the 2,000-point list would allow you to have everything. And it was like building kind of restrictions in the small list to create different, and obviously different points obviously shift the balance as well. And that was great fun. And that was such a really interesting tournament. And it created its own Battle of Chumps meta, where people are like, you know, really, really trying to like work out the puzzle of that. And I think you can definitely do that by moving things around there. But my auntie is always saying, like, we keep going to like knights and Mortari and stuff like that. Saying like, I mean, one of the guys wrote in the chat, you know, run a talk about Marines. It's like, yeah, Marines are bad, but they're overpowered, yes. But just say no Marines, it just disenfranchises people. And I am, like you said before, I'm of the opinion that tournaments are the way to bring people together. So say you can't play something, you're basically putting a barrier of entry to potentially to people who won't come. And they feel excluded. And that just goes against it, I think.
Okay. No, that's a fair point. I absolutely, your drive and passion ultimately is always for inclusion. So yeah. Like, I understand your points. I get it. Right, listen, everyone. It's been a pleasure. Yes, Meatballs is correct. There is going to be 18 naked cowboys in the T-Sports arena. That's going to be. Yeah, Herminist, I'd agree with that as well. Listen, guys, it's been a pleasure hanging out today. I did 8 hours of streaming yesterday, and then we're going to do a ton of streaming tomorrow because obviously it's the Games Workshop reveal day. Neil, I'm going to ask you in a minute what you think might be, what we might see. But do join us again tomorrow for like at midday. So it'll be me, Nick, Tom, and Scrivo. We're going to be hanging out for the whole day. Well, not the whole day, like four hours or so during the reveal. So I'm really excited about Spinny Model with a red LED light. So I'm hyped for that. But please join us. It's going to be super fun. We'll hang out. We'll take the piss a little bit. We'll make some jokes. Maybe we'll make friends along the way. Who knows? And Neil, you got anything you're excited for tomorrow?
Excited for seeing more of the vampires, because that vampire lore model with the bats in the hair, I looked at it and thought, damn, that's nice. That's almost Chaos Warrior nice. And the chunky armor, that's an aesthetic I can get behind. And then the potential Imperator Titan, because there is a model for Titanicus coming out, and it has a big gun pointing out its knee. So I'm feeling like that's an Imperator, potentially.
Wow. Yeah, I mean, again, all those Titanicus bros, wherever they are in the world, I'm excited for them.
One here.
Yeah, and a new game system as well. I've heard, my favourite joke so far is that I've heard it might be Tony Hawk's Pro Skater 3, which I'd be really in for if that's their new game system.
If they brought back Man of War, I would be so happy.
Yeah,
you're okay. Do you know what Man of War is, Rob?
Isn't it the boats?
It's the boats. It's such a great game. I had so much fun playing that as like a young teenager. Such a great game. And again, it was really good game mechanics. Really solid game mechanics.
I never played it, so I really have nothing to add to it. I mean, all of the subsidiary game systems are fine. Like, you know, we talked about it a minute ago, you know, when you bump up against those problems in Age of Sigmar 40K, you're like, oh, for fuck's sake, I wish they'd sort that out. Like, I imagine that's resplendent across all of the systems, and it's just there's only so many crosses I can bear at the moment. it's where I'm at. But yeah, epic, could be epic, it could be dreadfully, who knows what it's going to be, but very exciting. So we'll find out tomorrow. Join us tomorrow. I'm hyped for it. It's going to be super sweet. Neil, thanks for being on the show.
Thanks,
really
for having
appreciate
me on.
That. Obviously, you can go listen to Neil and all the other guys from the WTC organization on the WTC Squadcast if you guys want to go listen to that, hosted by our man Tom Layton, who's just a little treasure, isn't he?
He does all the work. I just find people to interview for him.
He's a ledge. So yeah, go do that. And then Neil, pleasure. Hopefully we'll catch up with you again soon. And we'll see you guys later. Look after yourselves, stay healthy. Thanks for listening to Thomas Ball Gamer. We'll see you soon. We'll be right back.